What's the source of wisdom? How can you live a more conscious life? Sometimes it's the questions that bring you your own quantum leaps. Wisdom Talk Radio brings you conversations with visionary thinkers, business mentors, and provocative authors and teachers, along with resources that point the way for you to claim your potential in service to the world. Join Laurie Seymour at Wisdom Talk Radio for explorations in conscious living. Subscribe wherever you listen to your favorite podcast or find us at Wisdom Talk Radio on Facebook.
Wow, that was such an interesting episode today. I enjoyed it. I could have talked to Dr. Barrick forever.
Agreed. Yes. I mean, we were talking about the brain and the brain being such this huge topic, but he's a neurofeedback practitioner here in my area, actually. And he treated my husband and also treated many of my clients. And I've seen such amazing things happen for them. So Dr. Barrick is not only a neurofeedback practitioner, he does acupuncture, nutrition, pediatric chiropractic work, different chiropractic work, therapies. So he's just, you know, a wealth of information when it comes to the body and the brain. But yeah, I don't know.
He really is. Like, he knows his subject area so well.
Mm-hmm. Big time.
And I really like this episode too for us just digging into what is neurofeedback, because I've heard of it, but I don't really know what it is. And it was very helpful for me also to understand what it is and what it can do for you. And what I really appreciated about him was that he was super clear on what it's not.
One of my favorite aspects of the episode is that not only did we talk about neurofeedback, but I feel like you get almost a crash course on what the different frequencies of your brain does. Ooh, and how to, how to find peak performance, how to help yourself if you're a highly reactive person, you've endured trauma, or you're highly sensitive. We even unpack, you know, what neurofeedback does for the highly sensitive brain. And so I think it's a really interesting practice, not even if you're going to do neurofeedback, but also to kind of just learn how you can work with and change and improve your brain as a whole.
So we loved this episode. We loved this guest, and I know that you will love him too. So please stay tuned for this wonderful episode with Dr. Robert Barrick.
Welcome to the Sensitivity Doctors Podcast. Here we explore everything from overcoming anxiety to living in a world not always designed for our sensitive wiring. Whether it's navigating business, parenthood, overcoming trauma, or getting what you want out of your relationships, we invite you to this empowering journey of self-compassion and growth. Sit back, relax, and here are your hosts.
All right, well, Dr. Barrick, it's nice to meet you in person. You know, face to face, we've gotten to talk before. So really excited to unpack this episode with you. Personally, you know, I have some experience and I'll definitely have some questions based on that. But also, you've helped so many of my clients. So I can't wait to ask you a little bit more about all of this. So for people who don't know, can you maybe start with a little bit about what got you into doing neurofeedback and what exactly it is, so that folks can know what we're talking about today?
So there were two reasons that really moved me into neurofeedback. First was a dear family friend whose son was on antidepressant medications early in life. And he was hearing voices, and the standard approach was talk therapy was helpful, but medication, and he took his life. And of course, we know that's one of the side effects of the antidepressant medications is suicide. And you're thinking, crap. And I put like that little bookmark in my head. And then it's been probably now 9-10 years where my mother had a stroke. She was in her 80s. She had year post-stroke, had all kinds still of limitations. And I reached out to the smartest people I know in stroke rehab, and they says, oh, you need to do neurofeedback with her. Mm-hmm. So I took a 80-ish-year-old woman, 1 year post-stroke, who couldn't really care for herself, walk without a walker, feed, dress, all that. And I brought neurofeedback in with her, my first guinea pig patient, and I restored much of that. So it was It was a wow. Who are you? You can have a conversation. You can dress yourself, feed yourself, care for yourself, walk without a walker. And it's like, holy heck, in a year after the stroke. as we all know, there's that 6-week window post-stroke. That's your honeymoon. If you get it, you get it. If you don't, well, you probably have to live with it. But neurofeedback gave me the ability to, and with those two things and kind of that initial friend's son, I said, hey, I need to jump into this full speed. So Amelia, you asked a great question, Doc. 1965, a little bit of history, 1965, NASA Gemini program, the astronauts were having seizures around the rocket fuel. So they brought in a guy, Dr. Barry Sternman from UCLA School of Medicine. He conditioned their brains, the astronauts' brains, to not have seizures. So everything's based on data. Every astronaut since 1965 gets neurofeedback. I tell people, I'm the mechanic of your brain. So, and the joy is not only do you have symptom potential help with, but also it's for peak performance. It's for physician burnout. It's for, so, you know, the brain's kind of one of those important things, and it's that mama scenario. If your brain ain't happy, ain't nobody happy. And it's a tool. I tell people it's a tool. It's not the be-all, end-all. Heck no. It is a tool when used appropriately, amazing. But there's other conditions that it's very inefficient for. So like tinnitus, right? Very inefficient for that. So what's the basis? Operant conditioning, behaviorism. Real world, I tell people I'm a squirrel trainer. So I'm training the squirrels in their head, especially, you know, children, et cetera, that when you're outside playing in the yard, let the squirrels run all over. But when you're in class, when you're in homework, okay, squirrels, you need to sit in the back of the room. I need to get my homework done. I need to stay on task. So I joke with people, I'm a squirrel trainer. So all based on data. And that is why, you know, there can be really consistent results with some groups of people. And, you know, that's the overview.
And for someone who doesn't get a scope of it, I know you're not going to break down the full science of it, but what could they expect when they go into their first session?
Okay, so there is a thing called a quick EEG or a QEEG. We put a cap on their head, goop in their hair, and I gather 10,000 data points, eyes closed, 10,000 data points, eyes open. After that, we send that data up to a normative database. So all this data gathering, data cleaning report takes about 30 minutes. The joy of it is it's non-invasive. So I'm not injecting them. We're not doing a CAT scan. We're not doing a SPECT scan. We're basically putting a cap on their head. I have no idea what they're thinking. I'm just seeing how the brain is running. I tell people, think of your car. You get a check engine light. Well, I'm putting the computer on the car and it's saying, oh, here's your error codes. And then now I use my clinical hat to say, all right, is this something that we can help you with? Why is it critical? You have four brains in your body. You have a right brain, a left brain, a thyroid brain, and a gut brain. And why do I tell you thyroid brain? Well, your brain weighs 1% of your body, but consumes 25% of your calories. So it eats all the time. And if you're not getting enough energy to it, that is huge. And that is why neurofeedback can fail, because this brain and the gut brain aren't addressed. And if you don't address them, again, I'm an analogy person. It's like pushing a car with a brake on. We ain't going to get anywhere.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So critical to, and the initial scan doesn't tell me what's broken. It just tells me we need to look somewhere. So then I put my clinician hat on and say, oh, you have We need to do more blood work for thyroid. We need to do more blood work for potential food intolerances. So we need to often tell them, so I tell people, you have a brains issue, plural. You either have this one and this one and this one, or any combination. So so again, the brain is controls everything. Okay, so does that kind of answer your question?
It does, and it's interesting. It makes me think of something just personal and random. I had the joy of meeting, I guess I call her my niece, but she's really my second cousin, a couple weeks ago. She's so sweet and a little fussy. And the new parents could not understand why she was hungry quicker than normal. And I was trying to explain to them, I said, I'm pretty sure you take a baby who's 3 months old, who's used to being in this very controlled environment, and put them into this huge social setting with all these people and new things to process. And it's all of this happening. Their brain is using all that milk up and they're going to need some more food. I said, I think she's fussy because she's hungry, because she's thinking a lot. And what you just said confirmed that. And I sense that even just personally, you know, days I'm working or days I'm using my brain more, needing more nutrition. So I love that you mentioned that because I sometimes say it's kind of like driving the a car cross country with dirty oil. Like you can't expect the car to work effectively. You can't expect it to get all the way there. So as far as other things that you would target with neurofeedback, there were three categories that Dr. Jean and I were really interested in. And I think one of them, obviously, personally, I'm interested in because my own husband had a traumatic brain injury from a car accident. And you, Dr. Barrick, dare I say, were like a couples counselor for us because it made a huge impact on our marriage, him going and doing neurofeedback in a positive way. Wow. And I've seen some of my most stuck clients from trauma also have huge changes from neurofeedback. And then the third category of ADHD, which I know that TBI can aggravate ADHD. So there's this trifecta that we're super interested in. And I don't know how you can unpack all of it, but traumatic brain injury, ADHD, trauma, neurofeedback, go.
Okay.
So, good luck.
So we're gonna jump to neurofeedback. Folks, neurofeedback is a tool. And when it's used appropriately, it's amazing, but it's not right for everything. So people get fixated on something. Oh, I can fix my stuck gutters with neurofeedback. No, you can't. Right? I can't fix tinnitus with neurofeedback. Success is super duper low. But I always look at it as this is a tool for you to use in your toolbox. These are for people that are hitting a wall where they're either A, they've hit a wall, or B, meds that they're on potentially, or they don't want to be on meds, are not giving them positive, they're having secondary side effects that are undesirable. Mm-hmm. So the big three that we see by far are ADD, ADHD, anxiety, depression, TBI, insomnia. Mm-hmm. Basically, again, everything is based on data. So the individual goes to a neurofeedback provider, they do a QEEG, and from that, think of it as you want to drive somewhere an hour away where you bring up Google Waze and it's going to tell you, don't go this way, go that way. That's the most efficient way. So each condition is a little different. Well, it's a very different area of the brain. So this is, we're working on the area that's not optimized. How do we optimize that area? Mm-hmm. So like all three of those conditions are amazing, the synergy between, you know, talk therapy and neurofeedback, because they're so complementary, right? They're complementary procedures. And that's where, going back to, I always like to have in your case, the more tools I can give you in your toolbox, now you're saying, hey, I can handle this. I need to co-treat this. I need to refer that. So I always take the approach of the more tools I can have in my toolbox, the more tools we can provide you, the better results you get, the more efficient, the more cost effective, the more long lasting. Like for instance, one condition is called CPIN, chemo-induced peripheral neuropathy. So somebody has breast cancer or some type of cancer, they get chemo, hey, they live, but now they have this peripheral neuropathy. Mm. Neurofeedback's phenomenal for that. So these are some of the best, MD Anderson in Houston, huge research on that's going to be neurofeedback, right? That's what that responds well to. Yes.
So let me just clarify from my side, this is like the first time I'm hearing about neurofeedback. I really don't know anything about it. If I'm understanding you correctly, you diagnose and treat or just diagnose? Say, for example, I have an anxiety disorder. I come to you, you do the brain...
The cap
thing that you put. Yeah, the jelly cap. And then you get data back and it tells you there's not just a problem here, there's also a problem in the gut or a problem in the thyroid. You tell me what tests to do. I bring those results back to you and then you give me some kind of action plan for how we manage these.
Great question. So let's get in there. and clarify. So the initial scan is going to tell me, do I need to look outside of the brain? And that's going to be blood work. Okay. So that will be blood work, thyroid. And I hear all the time where people say, well, I had my thyroid and it's fine. And very simply, ladies, they don't do the right thyroid work. They do.
Agreed.
Agreed. So my thyroid panel was over 13 indicators just for thyroid that I check, not TSH and free T4, right, which tells me nothing. So there is a diagnostic portion. Now let's get into a treating portion. A treating portion, again, operant conditioning, behaviorism, puppy training. Dr. Jean, you come in. We now say that there is attention issues. Well, good old Brodmann's areas, 400 years ago, we studied. The brain is kind of like a car hood. We lift that hood up and we see here's the brake, here's the master cylinder, and here's the radiator, and here's the engine, and here's the windshield wiper fluid. There's all the different areas in the brain. And with good certainty, we can say, hey, this area in the occipital lobe, if the alpha and beta waves are not in the right spot, we need to help them be optimized. We need the alpha waves to be higher in the right side and the beta waves to be higher in the left. So that's all gathering. Now this is a session. You're sitting down at a TV, you're nice and comfortable, you're watching something on Netflix connected to my computer. This is listening. Mm-hmm. And this is, I tell people, I'm your biggest cheerleader. When your brain's doing what we want, I give you a perfect 4K picture. When your brain is not doing what we want, I take the picture away. So the picture is going to fade in and out. Basically, I'm giving you rewards for good behavior, and I'm ignoring you. I'm taking the reward away. I'm not shocking you, but I'm taking the reward away when your brain's not doing what we want. Mm-hmm. Sessions normally are about 30, 35 minutes long. You start seeing a difference at about session 10 to 15. The people around you start seeing a difference at about session 5 to 10. I call it the question. And what's the question is what are you doing? Why? Oh, you're different. and then we get to 20 and we stop and we rescan. And I tell people three things need to occur. Okay. You need to give me a thumbs up. The people around you need to say, oh yeah, you need to keep going. And then I'm able to compare data round one to data round two. And I want a 20% or greater improvement. At that point in time, most people need 40 sessions. It's kind of like the good old broken arm, 6 weeks in a cast. With neuroplasticity, you have that. Your brain now knows how to ride the bike. Your brain now knows how to do that, with two exceptions. Number one, a concussion. And number two, when a young lady starts her menses. So we have seen backsliding on both of those. Not to zero, but definitely it could be 20 to 40% back, depending on, and that's just, you know, hey, the brain, and we can chat about TBI in a bit if you so choose, but
I do. Yeah. I would like to ask about that. Mm-hmm.
So again, it's all based on I'm puppy training. I'm rewarding good behavior. I'm ignoring bad behavior. The brain says, hey, I like this. It becomes your new normal. The Max Planck Institute in Germany says after one session, they can see new neural fibers growing from neurofeedback.
That's so cool. You know, a way that I sometimes explain it to my clients, and I don't know if you like this analogy, and I'd be very curious. Anytime we want to make change in life, we need feedback. We need to know that something's working or not. So I sometimes talk about if you're at the fair and you're playing one of those games that are totally rigged and we barely ever win. So if you throw the ball at the milk jug and it goes all the way to the right, you go, oh, I should correct and go to the left. So then you throw it again, it goes all the way to the left. Oh, I should correct. And you go again and you nail it. It's a lot easier to do that with our physical body because we can see, we can feel, we get to observe the reaction or the outcome. But with the brain, it's often much more difficult to be able to tell whether or not I'm focusing correctly. Am I using the part of my brain that's going to help me feel calm? Am I using the part of the brain that will help me remember these things or attend or attune? And so that's what I thought was a beautiful part of neurofeedback is, as you said, you have someone watching as you're relaxing. I know my husband watched the entire discography of The Office when he did his But, you know, you have someone doing that for you, have someone showing you in real time, but you're just relaxing and they're doing this really amazing feedback for you. So your brain can respond. Is that a good way of explaining that?
It is. I mean, and I'm a little bit, I tell people I'm playing checkers with your subconscious brain, right? Mm. You're just chilling out. You're on the roller coaster. You're chilling out. Enjoy the office. When your brain does what we want, I give your reward. When your brain doesn't, I take it away. And the cool part about it is it's very reproducible. So it's very reproducible. But no, it's correct. We're playing in the subconscious brain. I mean, if you look at all three of us, hey, we all know how to ride a bike, but we might not ride a bike for 10 years. And when we get back on that bike, we don't go to training wheels, right? We might be wiggly for 10 feet, but you got it. You're not going back to when we were, you know, younger. You're set.
Okay.
You're set. So again, that's the longitudinal portion. They have studies 20 and 30 years post longitudinal that you still have it. And except for those two exceptions, somebody has a concussion, which we can jump to at some point in time. We're really rolling out a super duper cool thing. I think it's going to be world changing. And then also if a young lady starts her period, there's definitely a lot of hormonal changes going on through the body. I call it the spicy years.
You mean the spicy life? Because you have menopause, you have perimenopause, you have all the fun.
Pregnancy.
You know, one thing I do encourage my clients to do though, post treatment, is to take at least some of the time that they dedicated to going to these sessions and starting a meditation practice.
Absolutely.
Because neuroplasticity doesn't just stop. You can still teach yourself bad habits. And so giving yourself the time to, not that you have to pick up a bike every time to remember how to ride it, but like you said, it'll be easier and you'll be less shaky if it hasn't been 10 years.
Agreed. So kind of you have the condition list, and that's the big three: your attention, anxiety, depression, insomnia. But you'll have others where we'll have, I mean, tinnitus, my success is single digits. Somebody comes in tinnitus, but if somebody comes in with tinnitus, we've gotten so much better results with dietary changes, pulling oxalates out of the diet. As crazy as that is, oxalates. Oxalates are healthy foods, but they cause the ears to, so that's just a condition that doesn't respond as well to neurofeedback.
So
there is a second class.
Sorry, can I just ask you, would that then be the same? Because tinnitus, it's to do with the ears, right? The ears and the teeth. Is that correct? Because my dad was just
ringing in the ears.
Yeah. My dad was just diagnosed with, we think it's a type of motor neuron disease. It's very, very rare. It's Charcot-Marie tooth disease, CMT. And he has stage two.
Never heard of that.
And he is struggling. Like his entire body goes into spasms and literally only his eyes move.
Scary.
He was diagnosed like 3 months ago and he's already like struggling to walk. So those would be some of the conditions that will not be a great success rate for neurofeedback.
Okay. So are you going to reverse it? No.
Okay.
But oftentimes in those conditions, there's some underlying metabolic problem.
Okay.
So think of this as inflammation equals Satan. You've got to figure out where your inflammation is coming from. And is it foods? Is it environment? Is it something? But are you going to make it go away like a splinter you pulled out? It doesn't hurt anymore. No. But in cases that are very similar or very difficult, you got to get to the underlying causes of inflammation. You know, I would address that. And there are some really smart people that we can chat about offline that I can connect you with.
Okay.
That are going to look from a tangential perspective. I mean, we have some people that came in wheelchairs and walkers and aren't wheelchairs and walkers anymore.
Wow.
And everybody said they got to stay there the rest of their life. The brain proves you wrong. If you put a limitation on the brain just laughs at you. And there is a great study I just pulled out from Lancet where there was a Frenchman in our brain, you know, we all took neuroanatomy 100 years ago. There's these little lakes called ventricles that create the cerebral spinal fluid. And this gentleman coincidentally goes into the doctor for headaches, and his lake, which should be about the size of my fingernail, is his 90% of his head. And he's functioning
his normally. Leg?
Wow.
No, his ventricle is 90% of his head.
Holy
is filled man. With fluid.
Yikes.
Wow.
And he's functioning and driving and wow. coach. And you just look and say, how's that work, smart
yeah.
pants? So like in your dad's case, if there's a rotten spot, in my mother's case, there was a rotten spot, you just route around it. Now, it's not always easy, but it's possible.
Okay. So I feel like that would tie us nicely into TBI, because with traumatic brain injuries, sometimes there's going to be an area of the brain impacted. So I have a question, and then, you know, maybe we could follow it up with what you're doing with TBI. With TBI, is the neurofeedback repairing the injury and the bruising and the malfunction, or is it, as you were saying, bypassing where the injury is and just strengthening other areas to compensate for what the injured part can no longer do?
Okay. So TBI could be a huge talk in itself. So I'll be super duper quick. Basically, your brain, as I talked about, consumes 25% of your calories.
That is crazy.
We live 99% of the time on glucose. That whole glucose system fails. So
when you have a TBI?
When you have a TBI.
Okay.
So, and now the brain has a backup energy system called ketones. So it can run on ketones just fine. Think of it as that your generator outside. Wait, we do. Power goes out, boom, generator kicks in, you're fine. You can't run forever, but sure as heck you can run for a long time. So what happens, Dr. Amelia, is the energy, all the pumps in our brain fail. And then the lymphatics back up. So it's rarely one area. When I twist an ankle, I twist an ankle. My right ankle's sore. My left shoulder's not. When I get a TBI, I can get systemic failures. I can get sexual function failures. I can get emotional.
Aggression.
And
you've probably seen there's been new studies out confirming the increase in suicidal ideation. And there's even they're making connections between the suicide rates in the military and those who were part of the project where they put all of these soldiers on the ground to do high artillery missions to save lives. They're sending less people, but they're getting more impact. And over time, these TBIs are then leading to huge spikes in suicide for the veterans when they're returning home.
So there's real cool. A TBI is not one area. It can have, it can have global effects in the brain and therefore peripheral failures. I just released a white paper last week on this exact topic. And the reason why is I worked with a team to create an acute concussion first aid kit. So basically somebody gets a TBI, they it's a powder, they consume it for 7 to 10 days. And it basically says, hey, you don't have that generator. We're going to give you orally that generator. We're going to give you exogenous ketones that immediately kick your brain into ketosis. They're going to keep the lymphatics working, anti-inflammatory, get through the blood-brain barrier. Because again, it's a fire. I tell people it's a fire extinguisher for the brain. You don't want to ever use it, but if you need it, I can't call Amazon and get it 3 days later.
Right? So, get what exactly?
Well, that fire extinguisher, you can't, so say for instance, somebody has a hot fire, they have a little fire in their kitchen. Well, if they can't put it out, it just keeps growing and growing and growing and growing. That's the same as the TBI. And that's where we're rolling out in September a product where people can actually consume acute TBI with the goal of reducing all those long-term peripheral residuals of sexual dysfunction, anger, suicide, because we kept the pumps working. We temporarily kept the pumps working. We kept temporarily kept the lymphatics draining. We kept the astrocytes still working and intercommunicating between all the poles, between all the different regions. We kept the default network working in the brain. just for this brief period until the brain 7 to 10 days later says, hey, okay, I'm ready to come back and turn on again, the normal glucose system. Mm. So yeah, I'm a problem person, but, oh, you've had anxiety. How long have you had anxiety? And then my next question is, oh, it's been 2 years. Tell me about your auto accident or your injury 5 years prior. Oh, I didn't have one. Oh yeah, I did. So it doesn't cause everything, but it really can be far-reaching negative benefits that you don't connect back to.
Yeah.
You bring up a good point about timeline, though. So is there timeline limitations on when these like first aid kits or neurofeedback can be helpful for TBI, and what is there like a golden time, and what happens if you've passed it? Because for instance, those soldiers I was mentioning, many of them didn't even realize that they were suffering TBI because at this point there wasn't proper testing implemented, but there's actually a bill being passed through Congress right now to completely change all of that, which is super exciting. But what are the timelines as far as actually helping with a traumatic brain injury?
Okay, so there's in the world, this is not a United States problem. This is not a Portugal problem. This is not a South Africa. This is a world problem. Mm. So every 2-3 years, they bring the world together. And there's the Berlin Working Papers, the Amsterdam Working Papers, and TBI is multifactorial. Is it head? Is it eyes? Is it cervical spine? Is it all of the above? The answer is yes. The quicker, anytime you can treat something, the less residuals.
Okay? Of course.
Does neurofeedback work 5 years after a TBI? Yes. It just takes longer, right? I don't want to do neurofeedback with an acute TBI patient. The brain cannot handle it.
Mm. Oh, okay.
So the brain, I want the brain to kind of take care of its all internal things. I don't want to be stimulating it, over pushing, making it do extra work in that initial, period. That's why put this together, this formulation, where if we can make the problem much smaller, it's much easier to fix.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So Amelia, I have a question. Please. That I think will go into what Dr. Barrick says. Remember our episode with David Jacks, and he was talking about, I think, NET. Is that what he was talking about? Okay. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry if this doesn't make sense, but is that
I'm
the
giggling
same?
Because I still don't fully understand the science behind
okay,
it.
Okay, so this is completely different. Neurofeedback and NET, it's not the same thing at all.
Yes.
Okay. Okay.
They're nothing.
Okay.
They're
okay,
nothing
okay,
alike.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes, and I was giggling just trying to still grasp the science of NET, but so as far as what I'm hearing you say, the sooner you can get the nutritional deficiencies, the fuel needed for the brain to heal, the better. And then after after a month, you can then start something like neurofeedback. I'm curious. There's these myths around concussion that I'm curious if you have a thought on regarding sleep. For sure. There's this huge, let them sleep. Don't let them sleep. What is your take? Because that's, I think, a very confusing concept.
Okay. So again, this isn't my opinion. This is, I have a clinical opinion, but there are super smart people. And I want to say it's the Berlin, I'm blanking, is it the Berlin or the Amsterdam? But the latest working papers are, if they want to sleep, let them sleep. Mm, don't wake them up every 4 hours. Sleep is their friend. Mm. Increase activity quickly, but gradually. Mm. Mm-hmm. But again, it's you got to have 6 factors. You got to deal with the eyes. Most people's eyes get very, their eye tracking, that when you're looking out that window called a saccade and you see, oh, look, there's something and there's something and there's something. It's so complex. So the current working papers are, you want to try to address everything as quickly as possible at the gradual rate. And please understand, it's not one concussion. They had one 4 years ago that never healed right. Mm-hmm. So it's not like you're starting from 100% every time. Mm-hmm. And that is that people can have a bit of a challenge getting that around their head is because, well, I just barely bumped my head and I can't function and I have headaches and I can't. Well, it's the 14 you had before.
That, right. Even being a child. I mean, correct. Gosh. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. My daughter fell on her head so many times when she was small. I hope that's not going to come back to haunt her.
It's your fault. So, but no, 80% of kids will fall from 3 feet by age one, according to the CDC.
Okay.
It's not a child abuse. They roll, they move.
No, I'm literally thinking of when my daughter rolled off the bed when she was a baby. And yeah, no.
It happens.
I'm curious. There's one other area that, you know, we haven't touched on, but because we are the sensitivity doctors, you know, I'm so curious about highly sensitive people who have a more active limbic system and whether there is value to neurofeedback for some of the, I don't want to say struggles of being an HSP, but it can be a more challenging life at times.
Okay. So there's many forms of neurofeedback. Probably 80% of the neurofeedback, and this is just my number, is eyes open or eyes closed. And you're either puppy training. Is it television you're rewarding in and out? Is it sound, music you're rewarding in and out? So you're gonna do audio fading or video fading. There is another portion of neurofeedback, which we do peak performance. And you know, and the person who used it 100 years ago was Thomas Edison. So when people were falling asleep, they go into a hypnagogic state, which is twilight. And that twilight is this. Right? Go to church. Boom. Election. Boom. So they're not asleep, but they're working on it. So you put these people in this hypnagogic state. The alpha waves and the theta waves invert. The beta waves and high beta waves start dropping. You get emotional integration. And you're working with the default network. So on those individuals, it's going in with kids' gloves. It's helping the right brain and the left brain to kind of just get in sync. Very, very gradual. It's trying to get them to alpha theta. We do that with our peak performance people. It really helps with burnout. It helps with PTSD. We don't know what they're throwing away, but we just see that they're throwing away junk. I call it cleaning out the emotional junk drawer, but it's taking the limbic system and saying through the default network and saying, hey, wow. I'm not, you know, I'm not on this fight or flight limbic last soldier on the wall. And if I fall asleep, everybody dies. Mm-hmm. That's the world we're living in.
And to clarify, you know, the default mode network for anyone who doesn't know what that is the areas of the brain that fire when we're not focusing. And it's kind of where we wander to. And for many people who have endured trauma, the default mode network can be a somewhat unpleasant place to live. If your default mode network is a space where you're catastrophizing or worrying, or I think my default mode network is a planner. Yeah. Not shocking, I'm sure. And it's interesting. I've contemplated when my schedule frees up sometime in the next 10 years of maybe coming in and trying, because I think I remember you've done 20-20 of those initial sessions. And then usually the last 20, if someone stays for 60, is the type of sessions you're talking about, which are a little bit more of that kind of purposeful relaxation, more meditative type of sessions.
I mean, we have people at session 300 just because they're peak performance. They have their, so I tell people, if we're doing alpha theta, there's four things. First of all, more responding and less reacting.
And can you tell folks what is alpha, theta, beta, like just really quick so that they understand what you're saying?
Okay, so they learned that is in over 100 years ago when they're starting to listen to the brain's waves, they use the alphabet. So delta, then theta, then alpha, then beta, then high beta. So there's different, think of it as like radio stations, 1 to 4 hertz, 4 to 7, 7 to 12, 12 to 15. And we just put names on them. So kind of to use a vernacular in the profession, and really it's not us, but it's in the brain profession, they said, oh, this is 4 to 7 hertz. Okay, this is 1 to 4 hertz. This is delta. And then you got theta, alpha, beta. So they just put names on different frequencies. Think of it as on your radio, you have a locally have 101.5. Okay, well, that we're going to call that A frequency. And then 105, okay, that's B frequency. So they just kind of put names on them of a very specific hertz that the brain produces. And we know a lot.
Is one more desirable than the other, though? Like, are we aiming for one versus the other?
They're all good. It's just they're all good at the right time, but you just don't want too much of one, right?
Thank you. Okay.
Right. And I use the example of a stick shift car. Well, first gear is great, but I don't want to live in first gear. I need to get in fifth gear. Right? I want to be able to sleep, but when my eyes are open, I want a different frequency because I'm processing. I want to be as efficient as possible.
Yeah.
Right.
So what is alpha associated with then?
You're going to ask all those good questions. So you have, and I'm going to kick that down the road because I could go back and look at up stuff because there's a lot of stuff that's come back recently, but delta is primarily for sleep. Alpha brain, alpha in the frontal lobe especially, is a very busy brain. This is a person that's always thinking, right there.
Okay. We're going to use that clip right there for the reel.
So
on Instagram.
Exactly. But that's where it's like, they're harmonicas. They can talk both in and out. So those are the different frequencies. But in alpha theta training, we want to put them in that twilight state. Thomas Edison, it's more responding, less reacting. Internal calmness, creativity goes up, and it helps clean out the emotional junk drawer.
Okay. That's cool.
For instance, when I do it, I'm fairly good shape. My resting heart rate's about 55, 56.
Whoa.
When I do alpha theta training, my heart rate will go into the 30s.
Whoa.
So I'll hit 38, 39, 40, which, you know, is safe.
And you're still alive.
It's safe, but your brain, my whole nervous system goes, okay, B. You know?
Oh my gosh, that's so interesting because I think about when I like go do acupuncture, which I love.
Yeah.
Sometimes I feel like I forget to breathe. Like I feel like I'm not breathing. And I think it's because my nervous system just gets so relaxed.
Exactly.
Yeah, I'm like, oh gosh, have I breathed this minute?
Sure.
But also the brainwaves that you're talking about now, where they're all good, but they should be in balance and they're good at different times. Is this also, again, how I understand it is, for us that struggle with anxiety disorders, we tend to have beta waves that are always kind of firing at a higher level because we're always, I call it buzzing. We're always like, you know, like underneath the surface. Is that true?
Okay. So you have the delta, theta, alpha, beta. The alpha, you want to be higher in the right side of your head with your eyes. If we just look letter of the law, QEEG, we want the alpha to be higher in the right side of your head with your eyes closed. So that means alpha, but it's more pronounced on my right side. The beta, we want more pronounced on the left side with the eyes closed. So if it's opposite, you'll have anxiety. So our job is to say, push it over here. Beta's not bad. It's just, it's got to be in the right side. Got to be in the right side of the house, in the right side.
Oh, that's very interesting. Okay.
And about 1 in 10 people come in and say, I'm not telling you anything about me. So you gather the data and I say, okay, well, hey, I think you could have anxiety and you can have whatever. And a few weeks ago, I had a person come in and he just said, just stop. And I was like, okay. And he says, just let me tell you, you've told me more about me and I'm a psychiatrist. so you can tell a lot. And the joy of it is if you get the four brains right, this one responds much better.
Okay.
That is so cool. And I'm curious, you know, with all of this that you've been able to unpack today for our listeners, and I'm sure there's probably follow-up questions people have because it's such a big topic. If someone maybe doesn't have the means to go get neurofeedback right now, whether it be time or finance or just access, are there any practices that you think someone could be doing to gain some of those same benefits today as maybe they they save up or seek to do neurofeedback in the future.
Mm-hmm. So there's absolutely. So, I mean, and I tell people, I want you to be an SOB 10 minutes a day. And everybody knows one abbreviation of SOB, but I say, no, short of breath. Right.
Okay. Thank you.
I want you to be short of breath 10 minutes.
I was so tempted to say the other one.
Right. They're like, oh, I'm an SOB all the time. It's like, I know that, but I need you to do this. Mm-hmm. So short of breath 10 minutes a day, meditation, just sit quietly. Right. Mm-hmm. This thing called a phone, put it in a different room. Right.
Oh my gosh.
Oh, I do that. Yay.
Unplug. Unplug. Good for you. Mm-hmm. Right. Touch earth.
Yeah.
You know, get barefoot if you can. There's a great thing called heart rate variability. That's something that, I mean, low tech, but really effective, really, really effective. Mm. So again, it's what are you putting in here and how can you do things to get out of the circus of in your face, fear, because that's what sells screens, right? That's what keeps you on your blue.
Wow. That's amazing.
I love that.
Yeah.
A dopamine break.
Such an amazing episode. Break. So informative.
I really, really appreciate you taking the time to come and talk to us, answer some of our questions. And really one of the big missions that we have with this podcast is giving people access to ideas of how to cope with life and sensitivity and whatever the thing that may lead them into an office like yours. And so if anyone is in the area and wants to find you and or out of the area and wants to learn a little bit more about your papers or some of your information and, you know, things that you can do to help others, where can they find you?
So you can go, website is mybraindr.com. That's my neurofeedback. And for concussion, it's myconcussiondr.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Like Dr. Amelia, so we do so much remote training where people actually fly in, get their QEEG and take equipment home. Currently we have people in Asia, Africa, Europe, South Central South America. Don't have anybody in Antarctica right now. I don't know why.
Oh, shame.
Wow.
but you know, they can take equipment home with them. But again, neurofeedback is there. There is my suggestion, if anybody's considering it wherever you live, is if they don't start things with that QEEG, I really question, because now I'm just playing whack-a-mole. The data, gathering 20,000 data
points,
do it right, because that's going to greatly increase effectiveness. And the data is just not there to say, oh, well, you have this, therefore treat this side of the brain. Sometimes it is, but not always.
Mm-hmm. Right. Such a good point. I love that. Well, thank you so much for coming and talking with us and all the good, excellent work you're doing to help people. And we just appreciate your time. Thank you so much.
Well, no, thank you. Thank you for your time. Thank you for sharing the message. And thank you for all your work that you do. And I always want to try to be a tool or a resource to frontline therapists like yourself, because I mean, you're in the room, you're touching them, you're feeling them, you're hearing them. You know the story, and the more tools I can give you, you know, sometimes it's appropriate, sometimes it's not. So have a great day, and thank you everybody for your time.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you so much, Dr. Barrick.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of The Sensitivity Doctors. Please be sure to share our video clips on socials and ask your friends to rate and review this podcast.
Yes, sharing these videos makes it possible for your favorite podcast to move up on the ranks so that other people can find it, share it, and learn from it too. So if you can share today, we would really appreciate it.